So we're sitting here very peacefully and very happily on this land outside the not very much known town of Vellore. Eventually there should be a large temple built here, then many people will come. And just now, not so many people are coming. It's very peaceful. We can sit and discuss topics of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, topics about Krishna. But I'm not going to speak today about Krishna's flute or how Radharani is sometimes stealing it or such topics. In the great world around us, there are so many issues going on in the world, political issues, social issues, economic issues, academic issues, scientific issues, and within our International Society for Krishna Consciousness, there are many issues also, many of which center around the point of should we compromise with modern society, or if you want to use a less damning term, adjust with modern society, or should we try to make a revolution? Preaching techniques. Pretty much everyone in our movement will agree that we should preach Krishna consciousness, but what stance should we take to do that? And many issues arise. Should we use rock music or just stick to traditional kirtan? One major factor in this is gender roles, because in the modern world, or in the Western world, when we're talking about modern culture, we're talking about Western culture, basically. So in the modern world, women have much more freedom than previously. There's also issues of homosexuality. There are many such issues. So, one question may be that why do I get so involved in all these things? As a sannyasi, I should just speak about Krishna, isn't it? And why does anyone get involved in this? The whole world's going to hell and we should just preach. What does it matter? All these different things. Well, we could say, well, let's just preach and we can think about all these things later, but it's a nice idea, but it's sentimental. Because how we preach affects the whole tenor of our movement. What we say, what we do, that's preaching, isn't it? It's what we say and what we do. So for preaching we may adopt many things, but there are limits also. It's not that, well, Srila Prabhupada said that you can do anything for preaching. But then having said that, he said afterward, don't take it like that. I mean, it's a theoretical principle, but just like we might think that, well, if I have to meet some important person, he likes to eat meat, so let me invite him to a restaurant and we'll eat meat together. So you met him and you made friends with him, but you ate meat. So you lost your own principle. So there are I mean, that's an extreme example. Often extreme examples are given to demonstrate the point that we're in danger of losing our own principles if we stretch the license for preaching too far. So what constitutes too far? That's a question. Why should I, being so involved, should I not speak about Krishna? Well, yeah, we should speak according to Gita, Bhagavatam, but in the Gita and Bhagavatam, these topics are brought up also. We find there's a long section in which Narada, who's famous as a brahmachari, he speaks about the different duties of the different social orders, and he also explains what are the duties of women, and he speaks about all these things. And Srila Prabhupada spoke about these things also to quite extensively, and he gave clear directions about that. Because when we preach, then people take to Krishna consciousness. And then when they take to Krishna consciousness, they want to know how to practice it in the best possible way. And the practice of Krishna consciousness does not go well with modern culture, because modern culture is based on sense gratification. And Krishna consciousness requires that we give up even the idea of sense gratification. So the two things don't go very well together. Srila Prabhupada, seeing that many of his disciples were not advancing as well as he'd hoped, and many were falling, they take to Krishna consciousness and then fall away again. It's very common in the Western world where the culture is not at all supportive to Krishna consciousness. To some extent it is in India. Just like right now in Prayagraj, now known as Allahabad, that name is still there. But there are literally millions of people gathered there for bathing at Triveni. One main bathing day was yesterday, Makar Sankranti. So that was, I think they said 40 million people had gathered there at one time. And so even though India's, or Bharat, we're going to be purists, Prabhupada said India, has lost its culture to a large extent, there are still many, many people who appreciate and respect Krishna consciousness. Whereas in the Western world, the fever of sense gratification is so high, and it's just such a normal thing, practically accepted, for people to have illicit sex and intoxication, that it's very easy to fall into it. And still, in India, it's not that men and women mix, well, it depends where you are, but they don't mix very freely. Maybe if you're at VIT, they do. But they have to be trained to do that when they come. Because then, is it? They're not used to it when they first go. If someone from a small town in Tamil Nadu goes to Bangalore, then they get a job in the IT industry, or especially in the call centers, they're actually trained how to be degraded to fit into the culture there. But in the Western world, they don't need any special training. They're just raised with it. It's just a normal thing. And there's not even considered anything wrong with it. It's just normal, that's all. So Srila Prabhupada, seeing that his disciples, many of them, were prone to fall down even after coming to Krishna consciousness, and it's anichanapi varshnaya baladiva niyojita. It's not that they actually want to be Krishna conscious, but in many cases they're just pulled or forced by their senses, it seems. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce Varnashram Dharma. which is the social system given by Krishna, Chartavarnyam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagasaha, to help devotees to remain on the standard of Krishna consciousness, four regulated principles, 16 realms, and to even more ambitious, to regulate the whole society. I'm not just talking about devotee society, but the whole world, so that people can follow a culture which is more conducive to taking to Krishna consciousness. So that's revolutionary. It's really revolutionary. There are so many different the 20th century, not only the 20th century, but the history of the Western world is, we could say there are three main revolutions which were very influential: the French, the American, and the Russian. And political revolutions which changed the course of history. So, Srila Prabhupada's revolution is much more far-reaching. It's a revolution of consciousness, but not just of consciousness, a social organization on a completely different basis to that of any revolutions conceived of in the Western world. It's really a revolution. Revolution means to go back to the original point, to bring back hierarchy. The French Revolution and the Russian Revolution, they were fought to bring down the hierarchy and make a more egalitarian society. And the American Revolution was to kick out the British, or to, they wouldn't be under the British rule. So it's a great revolution. It's a revolution of consciousness, and it requires us to understand why to do this. Srila Prabhupada didn't call us to make warfare or even to get into. He wasn't pushing our devotees even to get into politics. How can you have a revolution if you don't have war? You don't have guns and bombs and tanks and drones, the new thing. And you don't do any politics. It's a revolutionary concept of revolution. Revolution of consciousness. The things that Srila Prabhupada was suggesting, endorsing, or telling us that we should do were quite revolutionary. There should be specific roles for Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras within family life, that people should get married and not divorce. That's quite revolutionary in the Western world, that you should get married. And then once you get married, you don't divorce. This is quite a revolution. And young marriage. That women should have a subordinate social role. This is often misunderstood. It's a more subtle feminine role. And Their prime social role is as mothers and wives. Our wives comes first, and then mothers, not round the other way. So Srila Prabhupada was revolutionary, but he also adapted when he went to the Western world. He didn't say that everyone who joins me, they have to follow all these things immediately. In fact, he didn't even start talking about them very much until a few years of his after his starting ISKCON. He wrote about it in his books, but he didn't say that now we have to do this. And to quite some extent, he went along with some of the norms and practices in the Western world. And if he hadn't done that, he wouldn't have been able to establish Krishna consciousness there. In the first initiates, he didn't ask them to shave their heads. Later he did. Later he didn't want to initiate anyone without a shaved head, a man without a shaved head. And the first initiates, they were in their jeans and all this kind of thing. They really didn't know. I mean, that's at the very beginning. And later, gradually, Srila Prabhupada introduced more rules and made it plain where he was heading for. And in the beginning, I mean, socially, I mean, he made it very clear what his spiritual aim was, but socially, he didn't speak about that until some time afterward. And in the beginning, the Srila Prabhupada, when I say the beginning, I mean the early days of ISKCON, he was preaching largely among the hippies who were wild, and boys and girls would all mix up, and Srila Prabhupada, in the beginning, he didn't say much about that. Later, gradually, when devotees went to India and they saw the culture and they started to implement some of that. So, the world's going to hell. We need to preach. Why get hung up on these different issues? Well, it's not that we stop preaching, but we also have to consider how to instruct people when they come to Krishna consciousness. And we have to, as an organization grows, we have to have norms of behavior and should be clear what our various roles are. So it's a nice idea, we'll just preach and we'll think about all these things later. But if we don't think about it now, then we'll continue to have the same problems that prompted Srila Prabhupada to speak about introducing Varnashrama. In other words, we'll be preaching, people will take up Krishna consciousness and then they'll leave. Or they'll just go down to a very low level. So the problems are there. And also we want to show a better way of life. That's very much part of Srila Prabhupada's preaching. We may say, preach now, Varnashram later. Just like Prabhupada said, work now, samadhi later. But Srila Prabhupada said, preach now, Varnashram now. He didn't say, put it off till later. He wanted it now, so that's his order. And we should try to implement that. We have to follow some social system. And if we don't follow the system that Krishna gave us, then we have to follow the system, whatever's all around us. And whatever's all around us is a social system which encourages people to act in a way which is against their real self-interest. Encourages people to take intoxication, have illicit sex, gamble, and eat meat. So, the force of that social pressure makes it very difficult for people who are practicing Krishna consciousness. They may not fall into eating meat, but they're going to be if we're going to adopt that whole way of life, it's going to be very difficult for us to avoid all these things. So there are various reasons why Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce Varnashram. Farm communities where we can show people how we can live simply and happily and peacefully, healthily. So we should consider all these things. We may say, oh, don't bother, don't fight. Prabhupada didn't like his disciples to fight. Well, that's true. Of course he didn't like his disciples to fight among themselves. But that doesn't mean that someone should just come up with some wrong ideas and we say, oh, we don't fight. Srila Prabhupada himself, when there were wrong ideas being propagated within ISKCON, he didn't say, well, it's all right, just chant Hare Krishna. He took action, and he made it very clear what was the right path to follow. Siddhanta balya chitte na karaha alash, iha hoite krishne lage sujara manash. Srila Prabhupada often quoted this from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Do not be lazy in the matter of understanding Siddhanta. Siddhanta means the proper understanding. Because if one applies one's mind in this way, one's mind will become firmly attached to Krishna. There's a saying which has come from a book which was written fairly recently called Ideas Have Consequences. I haven't read the book. You get the gist of it just from the title. Ideas Have Consequences. Just like Marx and Engels had an idea, and the consequence was, it wasn't just a theoretical, they wanted to implement it, it was practically implemented, and the 20th century was a large part of it. A lot of the world was under communist regimes because Marx and Engels had an idea. Now, the idea that life has arisen by chance from matter, this idea has a consequence. People become atheistic. Or that different species have evolved by natural selection. That life is a product of matter. So the consequences, the abortion is considered just removal of unwanted tissue. But the fact is that people have to suffer for performing such grossly sinful activities. People think nothing of killing millions of animals. Because they think, well, it's just some matter, that's all. So ideas have consequences. Therefore, when wrong ideas, opposite hunters, are propagated, we should combat that. Now, it's a fact that it's very difficult for people raised in the modern culture to imagine anything else, at least people who are raised in India, they have some idea there could be something different, but in the Western world, they can't imagine that Varnashram society. It's just beyond their imagination altogether. I mean, practically, it was only after Indian independence that the caste system really began to break down with democracy and all this. And it's a common misunderstanding that we want to bring back the caste system. But the caste system, as it was going on, you could get a very clear idea of what Varnashram is. The potter is a potter. He doesn't think about becoming a Bollywood star. There wasn't any Bollywood at that time, 47. The barber is a barber. What does he do? It's clear what he does. There's no need for him to speculate or think about it or think, well, now I should start a business. And it is not his dharma to start a business. He cuts hairs and nails and goes to weddings, and that's what barbers do, and that's all. So it was easy to understand. But for people in the Western world, they can't understand all this, and they think that it's very wrong. Just like they think, oh, it's very wrong that boys and girls should be forced to marry. Well, they always make a point that the girls are forced to marry, but the boys are also. They don't get it. In traditional society, the boys, they don't get a choice who they marry. It was like that even in the West. People in the West don't know that. But it was like that even in the West at one time. So at least in Ireland, and I believe in other parts of Europe also, until fairly recently, you can't get married without your parents' permission. So, but in India, the situation is the child, the boy and girl, the parents select. And in the West, they think that's terrible. You have to love the person that you marry, but what is their love? They love, they divorce, they love, they marry, they divorce, they love, they marry, they divorce, they love, they marry, they divorce, and it goes on. So whereas in the Indian system, they don't know each other before they're married, and they just stay married all their life. So, which is better? That was the system. But in the West, they think it's horrible. Oh, these girls, they're married so young, it's very bad. But in the West, there's so many girls having babies unmarried at the age of 14 or 15, and that's okay. But that they should get married before they have babies. No, no, very bad. So they don't have any idea. So within our movement, it's the idea that we should follow modern civilization. There, roughly we can say, there are devotees who think we should follow modern civilization and those that think we should follow traditional civilization, or at least try to implement that, as Srila Prabhupada said. And while this will say, well, Prabhupada, he went along with so many things. That's true, but he also said that we should introduce the traditional society. So all these, at the present time, there is a lot of agitation that women, or to be more precise, devotees who are presently in the bodies of women, they should also be Diksha Gurus. So it's a great debate is going on. And in the West, it's much easier to live, even as a devotee, if you just, to a large extent, blend into the modern civilization. At least it seems like that. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to make a major protest. Actually, many people would appreciate if we did live on our own farms and produce our own food and live very simply. But, yeah, but these kind of ideas, like social roles, well, that can be introduced, or we can preach about these things also and tell people. They may be difficult for people to accept, but some people will accept. If we say that, well, we have these different social roles because men and women are different, different mentality, different needs. The women also need to look after the children. It can be explained. It's not that it's something completely coming from a different dimension of existence. It is possible to explain all this. I remember years ago seeing a TV show that had been made in Australia about our devotees. And it was largely based on interviews with the devotees. And it came off quite favorable. And I remember one scene in particular that where the interviewer asked some of the women devotees that, well, don't you feel bad that you have a subordinate social role? And they said, no, we feel very happy to be protected. Now, it is a fact that in our movement that many of our first attempts in the West especially, or among Western devotees, to implement protection of women and cows and Gurukul, it didn't go off very well. It became a mess, and there was abuse. So, considering that many of our devotees are very apprehensive about continuing with this experiment, they think that, because it's in the Western world, especially, to bring in these different social roles, it is an experiment. But it is one also that Srila Prabhupada said to do. It's experimental in the sense that in the Western world, in the Western culture, there's no idea of all these things. But it's not experimental in the sense that it's Krishna's system. So, it's again, revolution, going back to the original values. So it might be thought better to go along with the Western society, or you might think that, well, we tried it and it didn't work, so we better not continue. Maybe sometime in future we can do this. Or we may think that, well, women are supposed to be protected, but in the name of protection, there was exploitation, so just forget all of that. Doesn't work. Well, then we really get in the whole consciousness of modern civilization, because modern civilization developed out of protest against traditionalism. I mean, all over the world, previously, there were kings. It wasn't just India or Europe, or in Africa, in South America, the Aztecs and the Incas, what they call the Native Americans in North America, they had chiefs. It's a little different. And mostly the kings everywhere, it was understood that they're representatives of God. That was in Europe, in India, certainly. Naranam Chandaradhipam, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I am represented among men by the king. Naradeva. King is called Naradeva, the God. God represented as a man. But in the Western world, and that the Western civilization has become dominant, so one by one the kings were all thrown out because they misused their position. Instead of protecting the population, they exploited them. So one by one they were thrown out, and where they were retained, there are some countries in Europe that still have kings or queens, most famously the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, but other places also, Belgium, Denmark, Sweden, Monaco, some others also. They have kings or queens, but they have no political power. Figureheads, constitutional monarchy. So the kings were rejected because they were tyrannical, but then it's just tyranny continued in other forms. That's all. I mean, we heard that in Russia the Tsar, is that how you say it? No, I'm asking how in Russian pronunciation, how do you say that? Tsar. Tsar, Tsar, yeah. Just Tsar, straightened, yeah. Okay. So we heard that he was tyrannical. He wasn't such a good guy, the last Tsar. But then what happened after was much worse. The Bolshevik Revolution, it brought, I mean, practically the whole history of communism was one of violent oppression. Lenin came into power by severe, bloody revolution and oppression. And there were two groups, right? There was Bolsheviks, and what were the other ones called? Menshevik. So the Bolsheviks came out on top by killing all the, what are the other ones called? Mensheviks. Yeah. And then then there was the collectivization of land. The land was owned by landowners, the kulaks, and they were just all killed. And then Stalin, he killed how many people? It's not known. 20 million, it's considered. Anyone who Stalin thought didn't agree with him 100% had an early appointment with Yamaraj by the grace of Mr. Stalin. Gospod Stalin. Oh, they didn't. He's not a mister. He's in a bigger. Is it? All right. Well, I won't try and pronounce the Russian because it's very difficult pronunciation. For me, not for Russians. So, yeah, the tyranny came in other forms. It's not that the tyranny stopped. It's just that the system changed. That's all. In other words, religion was largely rejected. Many people rejected religion because they say it's just, as Karl Marx observed, religion is the opium of the people. Opium, if you become an opium addict, you become addicted and you become docile. That means you can be easily manipulated. So it was true, but it was the misuse of religion. So many people, they just rejected religion. Ah, God, forget it. If this is religion, just forget it all. Or in the Christian religion, in the Roman Catholic world, the Pope was rejected. We believe in Jesus, we believe in the Bible, but forget the Pope. We don't accept any authority. It's way ahead of the Ritvik movement. That we believe in Jesus and we believe in the Bible, but we don't accept any authority. No spiritual authority. So the Pope and the kings, they were rejected because of misusing their position. Similarly, feminism arose with the idea that women are being mistreated, so they need to get their independence. But the same mistake is in all of them, that because the principle was being misused, reject the principle. The king is not good, so kill the king and set up a democracy. What is there? Democracy, fascism, socialism, communism, all kinds of things. But the principle that someone should be in charge, someone who's trained, someone who's a representative of God to take care of the people, that's actually a much better system. It's set up by Krishna. But applying it in the modern age seems to be very difficult. So then we set up another system, but it never works. If we think we can do something better, it just doesn't work. And I saw practically myself living in Bangladesh in the 1980s that when I first went there, actually in 1979, there was military rule. There was a military dictator, Zia-ur Rahman. He was a military officer who took over the government. And it wasn't from what I could see, very oppressive. I mean, most people lived in the villages, and you know, it didn't make any difference what system they had of government. It didn't make any difference then whatsoever. They grew their food and they lived like that. But actually, things were much more peaceful and clear. But then someone decided to assassinate him. And sometime after that, democracy, some attempt at democracy, but it was just complete chaos. There were always riots in the streets, and it was better having a military dictatorship. That wasn't, I mean, he wasn't like grossly oppressive. One thing, maybe there's not a need to, another thing, very difficult to just grossly oppress the people who are scattered all over the country like that, whatever the reason may be. So that, Ritvikism also, they see the guru system, it's misused, there's so many problems with that, then just reject it altogether. No, we're not rejecting the guru system. Prabhupada's our guru. But it's actually, they've rejected the system. That there's no system in Shastra or tradition that you can make your guru someone who's not present in the world now. I mean, in one sense, they're guru, just like Rupa Goswami is our guru, Sanatana Goswami is our guru, but the system is, you have to take diksha from a person who tells you the mantra. And so the idea that you can just, there are so many problems with gurus in ISKCON, so the solution is, don't have any more gurus, just make Prabhupada your guru. It's the same mistake, that that misapplication of the principle means that we should reject the principle altogether. The real thing is to restore the principle in the proper way. Now, it may seem that it's very difficult to do that, or even impossible to do that. But man-made solutions don't work. We have to do what Krishna says. That's why we have Shastra. So our movement has to choose to try to do what Srila Prabhupada says, or to accommodate ourselves with the modern world. This is not a complete black and white, because to some extent we do have to accommodate ourselves with the modern world. We can't just flick a switch and turn on Varnashram. It doesn't work. It's not going to work so easily, but at least we should know what the direction is, where we're supposed to be, and make serious steps toward that. Not to do so would be, or is, guru avagya, guru avagya, to disobey the order of the spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada gave us very clear social direction. If we don't do that, if we try to accommodate ourselves more and more in modern society, then we lose our connection with the guru. Guru means heavy. Krishna consciousness is heavy, means it's serious, it's substantial. But then we see everything's becoming very light, right? And we have supposed to be preachers of ISKCON preaching, don't follow so many rules, don't make it difficult, don't come to Mangal Arati, one of our devotees was told. Don't come. Why are you putting yourself to so much trouble? Preaching becomes substituted by entertainment. That's considered to be preaching. So then we just become light. Then we're not guru. We have a kind of concoction of something somewhat Western, somewhat Indian, and nothing serious. And then we get those who speak about these different things. Being criticized within our movement, they're criticized in the same way that people outside our movement criticize. Just like if we talk about traditional gender roles, then people will say, you're a misogynist. That means you're a woman hater. If you say that women should have traditional, men and women should have traditional roles. But people say, why do you stress so much on the women? Well, it's the women who are changing. Because the women are trying to be like the men. It's not so many men who are trying to be like women. There are some, but it's mostly the women trying to be like the men. So why don't you allow that? Then you're a misogynist, woman hater. If you don't allow women to go around at midnight by themselves, then you're a woman hater. You don't allow them to have freedom. But there's a problem with them going around at midnight by themselves. And you can all understand what that problem is. That women should be allowed to drink and smoke just the same as men. Well, we don't think that men should smoke or drink either. But freedom should be curtailed. Then you're the Taliban, they say. The Taliban are a group of actually extremists. If you don't agree with them, they kill you. That's their method. So we're not going to do that. We don't preach by saying, well, do what we say, we're going to kill you. So we don't do that. But we do have Srila Prabhupada's books. I'll read one of the statements from Srila Prabhupada, from the most distributed book of Srila Prabhupada, and the most important in many ways, Bhagavad Gita as it is, most important. Well, in some ways, Srimad Bhagavatam is most important, but in other ways, well, they're all most important, but Gita is the most important because it's the basic philosophy is there, without which we can't even enter into Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Srila Prabhupada writes here, and it's definitely very difficult for many people in the modern world to accept, but Srila Prabhupada did say it. It is according to Shastra, and that Prabhupada said it and wrote it in Bhagavad Gita as it is, means that we as his followers have to accept that and preach that and live according to it, even though undoubtedly it will be unpopular among many people and difficult for many people to understand. Anyway, I'll read the passage. This is, I'm going to read from the purport, Srila Prabhupada's purport to Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter 16, text 7, the verse in Sanskrit is Pravrittingcha nivrittingcha janana vidurasuraha nashocham na pichacharo na satyang teshu vidyate. Those who are demoniac do not know what is to be done and what is not to be done. Neither cleanliness nor proper behavior nor truth is found in them. So, the quote from here. In the Manu Sanghita, it is clearly stated that a woman should not be given freedom. That does not mean that women are to be kept as slaves, but they are like children. Whew. And you could probably be beaten up for saying this in the Western world, literally. You really don't like to hear this. Children are not given freedom, but that does not mean that they are kept as slaves. The demons have now neglected such injunctions. Such word, demon. Those who don't believe in this, they're demons. It's very, very heavy. But it follows exactly from what Krishna is saying here in Bhagavad Gita. The demons have now neglected such injunctions, and they think that women should be given as much freedom as men. However, this has not improved the social condition of the world. Actually, a woman should be given protection at every stage of life. She should be given protection by the father in her younger days, by the husband in her youth, and by the grown-up sons in her old age. This is proper social behavior according to the Manu Sanghita. But modern education has artificially devised a puffed-up concept of womanly life, and therefore marriage is practically now an imagination in human society. Nor is the moral condition of women of woman very good now. And there is another part to that sentence which somehow got left out, in which Prabhupada wrote, in which Prabhupada writes, I believe it's in the newer edition of Bhagavad Gita, they put it back in again, in which Srila Prabhupada says, although the women who are married, they're in a better position than those who are not. So the demons therefore do not accept any instruction which is good for society, and because they do not follow the experience of the great sages and the rules and regulations laid down by the sages, the social condition of the demoniac people is very miserable. So, those who don't agree with all this, they're criticized. Not broad-minded. This idea of being broad-minded means you should just allow everyone to do whatever they like. But that's not a good idea, just to let everybody do whatever they like. That's not what we learn from Shastra. Rather, pravrittim cha navrittim cha, if you say that you should just let everyone do whatever they like without distinguishing between what should be done and what not should be done, what they call broad-minded is actually demoniac, according to Bhagavad Gita. Ya shastra vidimutrija vartate kama karataha nasa siddhim avapnoti na sukham na param gatim. Those who do not follow the injunctions of Shastra but act according to their own whims, they can neither be clean, nor truthful, nor attain the supreme destination. So these are all very heavy statements. They're given by Krishna. We're supposed to be devotees of Krishna. We're supposed to be following Krishna's instructions. How to implement all this, that is a big question. It's not so easy, seeing as the whole society is going in the wrong way. And what is right, people think is wrong. And what is wrong, people think is right. So undoubtedly, it's a big job to implement it all. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't try to implement it or that we should go along with the whole demoniac society. Just one more point I'll make now is that often devotees who are against the kind of preaching along the lines of what I just read from Srila Prabhupada's instructions, who don't like these instructions of Prabhupada, they often point out how the morally decrepit position of India today. They point, you see, India, there's so much this problem, that problem, there's dirt everywhere, and caste system, and the rivers are polluted, and women are getting raped, and this and this and that, which has really got nothing to do with the whole question. The fact that India, by not following her own culture, is degraded, well, that should be expected. But then, I guess by citing this, those who cite this, they what are they saying? Indirectly, that Indian culture is all bad and wrong, and because India today is following the wrong culture, that we should not try to introduce the right culture of India, which Srila Prabhupada always spoke about. It's illogical, or the idea that, well, we should go along with Western culture, because the West, they're morally superior. There's this idea that was introduced by the British and is going on all over the world, that the West is morally superior. Although, it's not at all true. I mean, if you go to the West, anyone who goes to the West from India, they can, such a big difference in the whole atmosphere. Anyway, you could say that's subjective, but criticizing India the way it is today really has got nothing to do with the question. We don't want to follow modern Indian culture, And we don't want to follow modern Western culture. We want to follow the actual culture that is given in Shastra, given us to us by Prabhupada. So, Hare Krishna. Any questions, please? I've spoken on these topics many times, but it's required to speak on them many times, just like Prabhupada often, again and again, spoke. We're not the body, because unless we say it again and again, people don't understand, they don't get it. So, we have to say these things again and again. Yes, please. One English phrase. A woman's place is in the home. A woman's place is in the home. Yeah, that was the culture all over the world, not only in England. That you have also the Sanskrit word grihini. Woman is grihini. In Hindi, that became gharwali. Same thing. So that was there. I read a few pages of one famous book by, what's the name? George Eliot, an English writer. I can't remember the name of the book. She's actually a female writing under a male name, pseudonym. So she was writing about the time of the Industrial Revolution in England, where people from the country were forcibly moved to the cities and put in extremely unhealthy conditions in the cities because they wanted people to work. Their land was forcibly taken away, and it was the Industrial Revolution. You don't hear so much about it, but it was horrible what they did. So I just noticed that it's a novel, so it's an imaginary story, but it reflects the social conditions at the time. So the woman was referring to her husband who was dying due to living and working in such bad conditions. She referred to him as my master. This was in traditional England, and that all changed after the Industrial Revolution. So that same culture in many ways was there all over the world. Well, it's not the only thing I speak about.
Yeah, of course. But speaking Krishna consciousness, I was speaking about Krishna. And it was a thing from the mindset.
Another thing, like I said at the beginning, we are sitting here very peacefully, but just down the road, it's all happening. You know, women preachers, everything. It's come to Chennai. Women sannyasinis in ISKCON. It's all begun. And it all come here. Just like in the cities in India, first of all, the girls started to wear jeans and everything. And then you'll gradually find it in the village. It hasn't come yet, but it will come. Velo they started wearing now.
They have a strong faith that when comparing to other, there are so many spiritual institutions in India. When you interact with themselves, they say openly that the whole modern world is going the wrong direction, even in India also. Only if ISKCON can, they can save the people.
Mm. That's an important point. The pious people who we're interacting with, life members, they say that the whole modern world is going in the wrong direction. India is going in the wrong direction. Even the spiritual organizations of India, they're all going in the wrong direction. ISKCON only can save the situation. But we ourselves are going in the wrong direction also.
In this within some 10-15 years, if we don't change ourselves,
If we don't change ourselves, there'll be no difference between us and Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, except that he'll have more followers, that's all.
Yes, they expect that we can do, we will do, we will have faith. Because the so-called Hindu welfare artists, welfare workers, they have realized all our
They have strong faith in us. It's amazing how they have such faith in us. Maybe they read our books and they think that we're actually following our books. Right, there have been no major complaints of corruption or it hasn't come in the public in India that individual leaders are corrupt or depraved, that we mix with all castes, we have no caste system, we're not caste conscious, like the BJP is, for instance. Is it seen like that? BJP is seen as an upper caste party. Is it seen like that? Well, you come from the capital or at least the place where... But BJP also, what's the great difference between BJP and Congress these days? There was hope when the BJP first came up that it would do something for the culture of this country, but they dropped all that now. I mean, there's some things they can do. They'll do, like bring in Sanskrit teaching and things like that, but they don't have any strong program to revive the culture. Narendra Modi's come up on not because of Hindutva, but because of business. He's promoting industrialization, which is spoiling the whole of everything in the environment of Gujarat. Oh, really? You see an email conference? Which one? South India? Oh, you should forward all those to me. You can tell me about it afterward.
So my question is that on the other hand, outside people, even though they are not very strictly followers of Srila Prabhupada, but they are encouraging ourselves to go forward in this direction.
Yeah.
So my question is whether it's maybe Prabhupada's message, so it's taking it to inspiration, you can go on. But at the moment, there is no encouragement.
I don't exactly follow the question. Should we keep on going, is it?
Yeah, we have to keep going on. But even I expected many senior bishops of Prabhupada, but I expected they will be in this direction, but they are in other...
You expected that the senior devotees, the followers of Prabhupada, disciples of Prabhupada would follow the traditionalism, but rather they're going the other way. Yeah, it is discouraging, isn't it? Anyway, we have to go on. What can we do? It's not all over yet, but step by step, things are going. We're going down. Just like you'll see, a beautiful temple is opened, and the only program they have organized for the public is a mantra rock dance. So, and if there's a mantra rock dance and there are many other programs going on, well, yeah, maybe okay. But if it's the only program, there's definitely an imbalance there. That's all they can think of. So, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.